So we're going to discuss some sports here tonight. We'll check in with Gary Larrabee as we usually do. He's got a terrific article. I think it was in today's Gloucester Times, so it was probably in, Saturday's paper, maybe the Salem News or whatever. But good story about the reopening and especially concerning driving ranges. But Gary will talk other stuff as well. We'll be talking with Nick Kukru of the Gloucester Times, sports director, sports editor, I should say, at the Times. And with Bo Dana. Bill talks with Bo Dana, who is a baseball player for the North Shore Navigators. And hope springs eternal that there will be a baseball season. Hi, Tim.
Good evening, Rick. How are you, buddy?
Doing good. Doing good. All things considered, for one thing, we've had a fantastic week and a half here weather-wise.
Yeah, it has been for the... For those that have been looking to get back out golfing, and as I've driven around and passed the local courses, they certainly are trying to get worked up back to speed. We'll see, of course, you know, you just look, and they don't have masks on. They're all grouped together. So, you know, they're not abiding by the... By the guidelines, that's for sure. Not enough of them are, anyways.
Well,
you know, and that's going to bring about the you know, you go, if you see a spike, they're going to shut them all down again, and then they're going to cry, and all they have to do is look in the mirror and go, boy, why didn't I put that mask on?
Yeah, well, you know, there's so many mixed messages, Tim, you get to a point where you take the risks into your own. Purview.
But don't cry when you get sick. Don't demand attention because you got sick because you didn't pay attention
well,
to what
fair.
The advisories were.
That's fair.
And when the stores close and when the golf courses, if they shut down again, don't cry. They're out there and they're walking side by side, chatting, no mask. It's like, come on, be smart. Do yourself a favor. It's wearing a mask. It's not wearing a suit of armor.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens, but things are slowly coming back online.
But again, it's slow because the medical professionals, they're trying to keep people, you know, acting within a sense of reasonableness and follow the guidelines. Until this is officially, you know, died down to a whimper, you know, all they talk about are, you know, spikes, possible spikes, you know, where all this is going on. And all you got looking to do is those states in the Midwest and down south that rushed to reopen and didn't really close, and numbers are spiking. But they're not saying anything about it, but the numbers keep showing up.
Well, one of the things that interests me, Tim, as sports starts to come back online, and I think, you know, that's got to be an asterisk by that because I'm not even sure what's happening right now. The state is supposed to allow professional teams to begin training again, and I guess the Bruins can, for example, go back on the ice six at a time, which makes no sense at all. And the idea, the logic baffles me, the fact that it's a contact sport, it's a collision sport, so you're going to take six players, put them on the ice, and call that social distancing, when in fact you're smashing and sweating all over each other, breathing all over each other, and then taking that back to the bench and the next group does it.
Right.
So the logic baffles me on some of this stuff. It really does. And that
I was watching the Bundesliga, the German soccer league, the other day, and there are guys on the bench, and they're wearing masks.
Yeah, well.
They are wearing masks. And then the guys out on the field, they're all running around. Now, they told them one of the things they couldn't do was they couldn't high-five, they couldn't fist bump. They had to stay away from all of that. And you see them score a goal, and they're bumping, you know, and then you look and see, and they say no spitting. Well, they're spitting all over the place. It's like,
of course, what do you expect? Yes,
you know, you in any sport, you know, you're sweating.
Well, that's the thing. So where's the logic in that? And so you're telling me I can't go out of my house and I can't walk a golf course without a mask on, and you're saying, oh, it's okay to go out there and have a contact collision sport because you're only having six people on the ice at the same time. You can see how people get mixed messages, Tim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the insanity of trying to open up under conditions. You can play the sport under conditions that limit your ability to play the sport effectively. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to prevent anything.
You know, soccer, I mean, it's all about challenges and knocking the guy over and headbutting. I mean, you know, they butt heads because they're playing headers, and these guys are up there smashing each other. You know, it's like, okay, so what are you going to do? Let everybody get a gain in advantage because you're not going to defend properly?
No, that's what I'm saying. I think all of this, and then again, some of the numbers, I mean, you question the numbers. Obviously, it's been devastating to the nursing home population across the country, especially in Massachusetts. It's been incredibly devastating. But on the other hand, it hasn't affected other people that badly in terms of seriousness. There were some, many, I should say, in the ICUs and so on. But again, you get these mixed messages, and I don't know. I'm hoping sports gets back in action, Tim, because I want to watch it. And I think given the climate of the country, these idiots who are looting and burning and doing ridiculous things, they need something else to do, apparently, besides, and maybe just go straight to jail and not pass go. But, you know, Tim, the climate is very reminiscent of 1968, 67, 68, 69, in that period. And I was in the National Guard right after Kent State, and our civil disturbance training was much different than what I see now. And after Kent State, as you remember, after four civilians were shot dead by National Guardsmen, and they were not looting, by the way, they were on a college campus.
Right.
National Guardsmen were not. We were not allowed to have rifles or sidearms. What we had were nightsticks and head. And they taught us how to form certain formations to for crowd control and so on and so on. And it was to up to the local constabulary, the police and so on, the local constables, to have the loaded weapons. It was not up to the National Guard. Now I'm watching Minnesota in particular, and I'm seeing all these kids, 19, 20, 21-year-old National Guardsmen and so on, and every single one of them has got an automatic weapon. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. Did they not get, what kind of training has gone on in the last 35, 40 years? Obviously, civil disturbance training either hasn't happened or it's changed radically. And I just don't understand it. But the climate, Tim, is very, very, very reminiscent of 68, I think.
Well, you know, we look back to the root cause of 68 and the civil unrest that took place. It was a lack of effective movement in the area of civil rights. You had the assassination of the leader of the peaceful movement for civil rights, Martin Luther King. You know, you had the assassination of Bobby Kennedy, a great supporter, an open supporter of civil rights, and you just had a powder keg waiting to explode. You know, the American dream for many individuals of color is not quite as easily attainable as it is for whites. Or for a lot of whites, I'm not going to say all whites, because whites, a lot of whites struggle to achieve the American dream as well. But the lack of civil rights for minorities in this country has been horrendous, and the Irish have gone through that in their time. You know, there were times in Boston, you know, Joe Sullivan had a sign that was reminiscent of it. Irish need not apply. Yankee Republicans would hang those in their windows, just in businesses and in homes, telling them, don't bother looking for work here. We're not going to hire you. They didn't want the papists. They didn't want the Catholics because they feared the takeover by the Catholic Church of the United States. You know, it was just nuts. And as each group came in, each faced their own time of prejudice. And we look at where did cops and where did Italians go and get jobs? They became the police. They became the firefighters because those were the most dangerous jobs in the cities. And eventually, over time, as the populations grew, these individuals, they use their numbers in the police and in the fire to into political rounds. Boston, that's where the Irish rose up. They rose up to the strengths of labor and being cops and being firefighters, because those were the jobs that they could get. They got the down and dirty jobs.
Yeah, but the case now is different because African Americans haven't even been afforded that opportunity in many cases, and the absurdity of these unarmed police shootings and killings has ratcheted and rocketed to the top of the interest. And that, you know, that video from a week ago in Minneapolis just was so vivid and so obvious that you can't have a beating heart if you didn't feel for that guy, no matter what he did. When you get arrested, I mean, they're arresting this guy for allegedly passing a counterfeit $20 bill.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you have the right to execute someone.
No.
And you know, in my mind, this whole thing, Tim, for me as a white person. I grew up in a rainbow society, being an army brat, and my best friends were African Americans growing up, and my girlfriend was, and so on. And then reality hit as I became an adult and how difficult things are. But there was an ABC News reporter on yesterday. It was yesterday Sunday morning, and he's a very distinguished reporter, and I can't remember his name, but he was describing something that's very, very seemingly innocent and yet humiliating at the same time, that I have never experienced. And when he said it dispassionately and quietly, but he said, and he said he's been stopped many times because he has an expensive car. And he says he's been stopped many times when he's on the road by police because he's driving an expensive car and he's black. But what he said was, he was in a grocery store the other day and he had a face covering on and he had a tie on, a white shirt and a tie. And he was cleaning his grocery cart, you know, with what do you call it, a wipe, you know, a Lysol wipe or whatever, just sanitizing it. And while he was doing that, a white woman came up to him and was standing there patiently waiting. And he said, "Can I help you?" And he says, "Oh," and she said, "Yes, thank you for cleaning the cart for me." and he said, "I'm cleaning it for me, not you." He said, but that kind of thing, that seemingly innocent thing, is humiliating.
Yeah.
Just because he's a man of color. You expect, this person expected that he was helping, you know, he was the help, automatically thinking that. And it's I don't know. The other thing, Tim, I want to mention is, I want to bring this around to sports. There was a thing on social media about Mike Pence saying, "We hear you." And then they pointed out, yeah, what about the football game you went to on taxpayer money? And as soon as the athletes knelt during the national anthem in protest of police killings, you left. So who are you hearing now? And you look back on that. What's your assessment now of Colin Kaepernick's knee?
Well, you know, I never saw any problem with it. It's an American's right to protest. And he knelt. He didn't turn his back. You know, he didn't block his ears. He didn't sing, you know, a song over it. He simply knelt down as a form of protest. You have the right to peacefully protest in this country. That's a guaranteed right. And what did Donald Trump make it? Oh, he's anti-government. He's anti-military.
Mm-hmm.
He totally politicized an action that was speaking volumes about how he perceived the treatment of black men in America.
Well, I think,
and he was using the bully pulpit available to him. Okay.
History may go back and look at this and relook at that moment when he first protested, and tie this all together, because it's a continuum, Tim. This isn't just an isolated thing that goes from day to day. This is a continuum. And the other thing that bothers me was, in Boston, we watched last night till about 7:30, and I said, hey, this is the way to do it. This was so peaceful. You know, I'm guessing tens of thousands of people, a mixed group, all kinds of color, and it was very peaceful. And then I woke up this morning and found out that the idiots, that were unleashed after dark. And that just ruins everything.
Yeah, and I was listening to, I just happened to catch some EEI this afternoon, and Jermaine Wiggins was talking about some of the positive things that happened during that the peaceful part of the protest yesterday, where cops took off their helmets, put down their nightsticks, and joined the protest. They knelt down with him. They hugged him. There was one cop there, an officer, who was going, "What can I do to help you guys?"
Mm-hmm.
And yet he said, you know, the media doesn't cover that aspect of it, that these, you know, these positive interactions.
Yep.
What gets put up there is the camera crew carries the kids lined up, breaking windows, going into this one expensive sports shop and just looting it, you know, to the bare shelves. So all we get is the negativities, and it's, well, protests. No, those aren't protesters. The protesters were gone. These simply were looters. Yep. These were criminals.
Yep. I hate to give Trump credit for anything with my political bent, but those were thugs, and they are thugs, and that's got to stop.
They certainly are, and they should definitely, you know, pay a heavy price. But don't lump them with the peaceful protesters, again, exercising a constitutional right, that they have. And, you know, you go back to Colin Kaepernick. You know, how bad does the NFL look now for doing what they did to him?
Yep.
Depriving him of an opportunity to make a living simply because he exercised a free right. Oh, they don't like it because it was on their field, during their game? Hmm. Well, that's America's game. You promote it as America's game. Well, he was doing something every American has the right to do.
Uh-huh.
Voicing an opinion.
All right, Coach.
Are you going to throw out all the fans when Trump showed up to the event and he got booed? You're going to throw all those people that booed out? No, they had the right to voice their opinion. That's all he was doing. And I disagreed with. I agree. If he wanted to do that protest, I had no problem with it. I've had no problem with it since the beginning. It's seemingly criminalization of his action.
Well, we'll see.
Know? And the penalty that he's had to pay.
All right, let's
get a football job.
We're going to talk with Bo Dana coming up here. Bill Newell will be chatting with him. He's a Navigators player. We're still hoping to get baseball underway. And Tim, we've got about 2 minutes here before we need to take a break. Your thoughts on baseball playing, and I guess in limited venues, is that the idea?
Yeah, I think they're looking to play at Disneyland. That's what they're going to keep everybody. You know, I don't know. You know, are they going to pump in fan noise like they're doing in Germany? A totally empty stadium, and it sounds like there's 50,000 people in the stands. And in one stadium, they actually have pictures of the season ticket holders in these big long rows, like banners rolled across the sideline seats. So it looks like there are faces there.
Well, listen, see, I don't care. At this point, Coach, I just want to watch something live. And, you know, I don't even care if there are people there or not. Just give me some sports, man. And I'll tell you what, I haven't looked at any of these historical perspectives and these reruns of the games. Not one. And I haven't listened to sports talk radio since this began, at least since March 13.
Well, I don't listen that much to it much anymore. But to be honest, and I've watched bits and pieces of some of the retros. I did not watch anything on Michael Jordan. You know, live through that time. I don't need to
yeah,
watch it.
Right,
even
right.
Somebody who wasn't around then, who wants to see a sanitized version according to Michael Jordan, because he had total control over.
Well, they're doing the same thing with Brady. Brady's got control over that too.
I won't watch that either.
No, I'm with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to see it, and fine. I saw it once. I don't need to relive. And again, he's got total control of the production. So what are we going to see? We're going to see the sanitized. We're going to see the Tom Brady version of Tom Brady.
All right, Coach. We'll be back. I'll be back with you with Gary at about maybe 10 minutes from now.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thanks, Coach. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
MSO News Sports is a unique multimedia website providing exclusive news and sports content for the North Shore. Our goal is to keep you connected to your local neighbors throughout Essex County and beyond. We feature the best of the North Shore, and we couldn't provide this service without the powerful support of our local sponsors. Like Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury, the Bradford Tavern in Rowley. Just like us, they care about the North Shore. Check out all of our podcasts and share our website with your friends. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Again, we are your connection to the best of the North Shore. msonewsports.com. Bo Dana from Marblehead is with us, and from the North Shore Navigators, played last year and is planning to play again this summer. And Bo, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Bo, you played sports at Marblehead, Deerfield Academy, and then back your senior at Marblehead High School, playing baseball there for Coach Giardi at Marblehead. And now, tell us about your plans to return to the Navigators. I got to share a note with our listeners here on you, because last year you were the you picked up 13 saves, right, of their 30-win season, and also became the league's relief pitcher of the year. So congratulations on that, with an ERA of 1.40.
Yeah, no, that was a great summer for me. Learned a lot about myself in the beginning of the season, kind of through fastballs, and that kind of carried me through the first few games. But then as the guys started to see me more and more, realized I need to have good second pitch, good off speed. So that's something I've been working on even a lot more hard this year. I developed a changeup, starting to throw a cutter along with my slider, and then always a work in progress is my splitter, which could be my best pitch, but don't know where that's going.
You sound tough right now, man, with all those pitches. But how fast is the fastball?
It's usually like low mid 90s. I've touched 96, but for the most part, I pretty much rely on that. The other stuff I throw in there and try to get people swinging and missing.
Sounds like a plan, doesn't it? I've talked to a number of different athletes, Bo, that were in your situation. So you're playing at Dickinson, the college season underway. Tell us how it had been going for you before it must have gotten shut down.
So it was good at the start. This year I was a starter. It's the first time I've started games since my senior year in high school. So first game through four innings was pretty much lights out. And then just kind of the toll of throwing more than my usual 20 pitches kind of caught up to me and started losing a little bit of steam on my fastball, that weight movement, and started missing down the middle a lot more. So as the season went on, started letting up a few more hits, a few more runs, but it was a good experience because it also taught me that, again, I need to work on my off-speed stuff.
Tell me about your growth as a pitcher and where you kind of can look back and say, wow, this is, you kind of were touching on this just a moment ago when we were talking, but tell me where it is that you found yourself growing or learning more about the game and pitching.
So I used to work with Guardy O'Flynn, who's a Tom House. He's actually the East Coast director of Tom House Pitching, National Pitching Association. So he kind of provided the base for me to smooth out my mechanics, all that. And then this past year, I went to this place in Connecticut near Dickinson College. Pennsylvania, called Full Reps Training Center. And they implemented a lot more drive line throwing, fine-tuning the little things in my mechanics that I had been missing, and that gave me a little 2-mile-an-hour jump, which for me I was really pumped up about. Always a struggle for me is still just trying to not rely on my fastball, but if it can get me there, it can get me there.
You know, you and I were talking before we started the interview, and we were talking about this league where you were not originally going to be playing back again in the Futures League. Tell us what your plans originally are, but then also that we got talking about the possibility that this Futures League, if the season does get underway, there are going to be a lot of very good players in this league because other leagues have canceled.
Yeah, so I was planning on playing in the NECDL, playing for the Sanford Mainers, but their league got canceled. So right now, a lot of people from the Cape and the NECDL are scrambling to find a league that's going to play. So there's a lot of D1 guys, high-end D1 guys from those leagues who are going to be in the Futures. So it's going to be a really, really tough season of baseball. I'm ready for the challenge.
Do you know, you must know some of your returning teammates then, as it turns out, you being a returning teammate.
Yeah, I haven't dove too deep into the roster, but I'm sure when I go to the first practice, I'm going to see a lot of familiar faces.
Well, tell me about your just some thoughts on playing Northeastern Conference baseball now a couple of years ago, and what kind of memories do you have from that?
I mean, I loved it. Not to sound a little cocky, but it was awesome just going out there and just kind of dominating, being the guy that could go out there and your teammates could rely on. Still hoping to be that guy prove to myself that I can hang with the toughest of guys this summer.
And maybe just share with our listeners a little bit about what you're doing this summer to stay in shape.
So I've been working out at North Shore Farmers Training for 2 or 3 years now. James Baker, he's the owner and one of the strength trainers there, and he's been sending out emails with workouts, so I've been following those. I work construction, so that's pretty physically demanding job. So by the time I'm getting to those workouts after my long day of work, I'm already gassed, and then getting that last bit of extra push, I think, is really going to make me a lot stronger.
Yeah, you said that job, you'll be flying, right? You know, get rid of that job, you know, man.
Yeah.
Well, we can't have that. But, Bo, anything else to share with us about returning to the Futures League this summer?
I'm just really pumped up. Really excited to play for the Navigators again.
Well, should be fun, and hopefully things the season does get underway. I mean, let's hope it does. But Bo, thanks so much for joining us and sharing your story. And you stay safe. And obviously, we know you're staying in shape. So Bo, great talking with you.
Great talking to you. Thank you.
Yeah. Bo Dana from Marblehead with us here on North Shore Sports Night.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and patio doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low-maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we are back live, and my great pleasure once again to bring on Gary Larrabee, sports writer, sports historian, and golf writer. Hey, Gary.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. And Tim was describing some events he has seen on the golf course. But I want to start, Gary, if you don't mind, before we get to your thoughts about the column. And the column is especially caught my eye there. Bill Poprosky and I were talking about it today, as a matter of fact, about the driving ranges and how it's kind of weird that there's a lot of illogic in the way these things are being opened up, not just restaurants, but other things as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, the governor's being misguided, and he lost votes when he was holding off on making Massachusetts really the last of the 50 states to allow golf to begin again, to start the season, and he's losing those same votes, I think, whether they were 100 votes or 100,000 votes, by keeping one of the most vital elements in a successful golf industry in any state, which are the driving ranges, which are open to the public, and the practice tees at public and private courses, keeping them still closed. There is some hope that they'll be open next week, I believe, when phase two kicks in of his four-stage plan. But he hasn't expressed that inclination yet. It's totally illogical, totally inappropriate. And if you can allow golfers to go out on the golf course, you can allow golfers to hit practice balls 6 or 10 feet apart on a practice tee at a driving range. Why he's dropped the ball on that, I'll never know, because I know the Massachusetts Golf Alliance has still been on the governor's case to get this other element of the golf industry back up and running. Very unfortunate. He has no sense of the importance. I mean, golf is a $1 billion industry here in Massachusetts. Never mind what it is around across the country. And he's hurting an awful lot of people by not letting the practice ranges, the driving ranges and the practice tees. A lot of people teach golf. A lot of people who teach golf can't do it right now because they're not allowed to either work at the driving range where they may be associate, or at the club where they may be serving as a assistant pro, a head pro, or the director of instruction. So sad stuff, and it's a big negative, and Governor Baker's great plan here. And all we can do is hope. I mean, May was the most fantastic month for golf I can ever remember for a May. We had sunshine like 27 or 28 days without. We had rain once in the last 3 weeks. All missed opportunity and a shame.
You there, Tim?
Yeah.
Nothing for. Go ahead.
Yeah, as I drove around and I went by again several courses, and Gary, you wrote about it in your column that the people have to be smart, or they're going to find the golf courses and the driving ranges all closed again if they're not willing to abide by the safety recommendations of wearing the mask and keeping distance. I didn't see people doing that on the golf courses that I drove by, and it's like, they're asking for trouble. It's just what you pointed out. Yeah, it's good to be back, but the situation, the health situation, still continues to be a threat. And all the rest you do is put a mask on and keep distance. That's all you got to do. And yet there's this defiant attitude that all of a sudden, if there's a spike, all these things are going to get closed again.
We'll see where it leads, but I haven't seen any reports anywhere yet where golfers are abusing their privilege, where there's been any issues with COVID-19 showing up in a golf setting. But it's more wait and see because we got a long ways to go through the summer. The numbers are still alarming, not as bad as they were in past weeks, but people are still dying in this state, and more people are still getting COVID-19. But the fact remains is there's almost no athletic or sporting activity safer that we know of than playing golf, and that means practicing golf, too. So we'll see where it all shakes down. Hopefully the governor will come to his senses soon enough, because right now I'm very disappointed in him.
What else are you looking at, Gary? National scene back underway yet, or what?
Well, it looks like we're going to see some tournament golf this weekend, believe it or not, in New England. According to Chris Francoeur, who's one of our outstanding young amateur players from Amesbury, St. John's Prep, he's going to be a senior at URI. He was recently named the New England College Player of the Year. He plans to play this week. As of right now, he's still entered in a junior tournament that also is for collegians down in Winton Berry Hills, down in Bloomfield, Connecticut. I think it's Saturday, Sunday, or Friday, Saturday, which would be the first competition I know of taking place in the East Coast, if not definitely New England. We'll see if that still holds true. And next week we get the PGA Tour hopefully kicking off, resuming, I should say, their season down in Fort Worth, because no galleries, and I got to believe there'll be very strong restrictions on this tournament for juniors as well as for college players down in Connecticut this weekend. We'll see how that all shakes down. But that's still a significant event. But beyond that, guys, I don't think we have anything going on in New England, particularly not in Massachusetts still.
Yeah.
Next month, we do have some qualifying rounds coming up for the Massachusetts Amateur coming up next month, mid-July. At Catansett, and I write this week in my column in the Salem News that Chris Francoeur will be a major, could be a major factor in that tournament since he finished, he reached the quarterfinals both the last 2 years. And I think he's our pick to click this year at the state amateur at Catansett. Of course, that also figures into the equation whether Stephen DeLisio will be playing. I have not yet received word from Duke or the DeLisio family that Stephen has gotten the acceptance he requested from the NCAA to extend his season one more year since he lost his entire spring season this year. I believe he expected that, which means he would retain his amateur status, and he would be having a chance to defend his state amateur championship at Catansett, where I just referred to Francoeur.
Cool. The Salem News boys were on with Bill Newell the other day. I think it was on Saturday or Friday. And Tim, you gotta be part of this. And one of the things that Phil Stacey brought up, Gary, was he asked the question of the panel: have you ever come close to being injured covering a sporting event? Have you ever had contact or anything like that? Tim's laughing already. And I gotta tell you, with me,
and you know why, Rick.
I do, Tim. We'll get to that in a minute. And Gary, you gotta hear this, but. But first, were you going to talk more golf? Because I got to ask you this next thing.
No, go ahead.
Okay. All right. So, for me, it actually came last this hockey season. I was covering a game in Gloucester, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with the rink there at the O'Malley School, but you stand the reporters, and we broadcast from behind the scorer's bench. There are no stands on that side. It's across from where the stands are, and it's a similar setup to Salem State. So there's also no protection there. You're standing above the glass. And so I was writing a penalty or something or other. Play had resumed, and thank God Nick Kukuru said, look out, and a puck just missed me. And had it caught me, I don't know what to think. My beautiful face would be even worse for radio than it is now. But is there any and Phil mentioned that he got knocked over at a football game on the sideline and things like that. Have you had an experience covering an event? And I believe Phil mentioned something about a basketball at a basketball game as well, but sporting events, have you had any close calls?
I've had sitting at courtside at more than one Celtics game back in the good old days where the media row was right there between the two benches there at courtside. I had Dennis Johnson get into my lap once while he was still playing Seattle before he came to the Celtics. And I've also had the same thing Phil talked about. I've been run over once covering a high school football game from the sideline where there wasn't a press box available. And if you're not paying attention, they can wipe you out and lay you out very easily in a high school football game, let me tell you.
Yep, you know, it's funny, you're taking notes and you're right, you don't want to miss a play, but you got to protect your life.
You do, but thankfully, I have not had any serious mishaps that require hospitalization, but of course we know hockey is probably as dangerous as any game, because baseball, too, with these foul balls at Fenway Park or hockey pucks at the Garden on one occasion or two occasions have injured people in a very serious way. But you have to keep those things in mind when you're a spectator, and it's one of the exciting things, I guess, of being a sports fan or being a media member.
Well, you're familiar with Twy Field in Danvers, yes?
Of course.
Okay, Tim, you're up.
All right, so Rick and I and Bill are covering Danvers baseball. And looking out of the booth, and we're on the right-hand side as you're in the booth, or in the window, and I'm on the inside, and then it's Rick and then Bill. So, and we're just beyond the tall fence. I put my head down to make a notation, and I hear crack. And Rick goes, "Coach, look out." And luckily, I didn't look up. I dipped my head further, and the foul ball caromed off of the top of my head.
And went way up in the air. It was a line drive foul ball.
So, yeah, in fact, that was like the second time. Oh, that was the first of two times when I got hit in the head by a foul ball when I was coaching, too.
I thought it was over. I really did.
I saw a lot of stars that day.
Yeah, yeah.
None of them gave me an autograph.
Well, yeah. Rick, obviously that explains Tim's bizarre behavior.
It explains a lot. Yes, you're right, Gary. It does. It explains a lot for sure. And you know, he's got that excuse now that the rest of us don't have.
You know, we've all seen some terrible close calls. We've seen some accidents at high school events, and you know, foul balls are as dangerous as anything. And it's just the nature of the experience of observing a sporting event. But we all have those stories to tell, that's for sure.
Yeah, and as I get older, man, it gets. I got to have more people around me to protect me, I guess. Hey, Gary, listen, anything else going on here that you want to mention? We'll be back. Go ahead.
It's really quiet. It's still pretty quiet. It's great to see all this fantastic weather. Golf courses have never been in more pristine condition for June 1 because of all this incredible weather and, you know, lack of play until they finally kicked in after the first week in May. And let's just hope we can start getting some tournaments played and get some competition out there and get back to normalcy, both at the highest level, the pro tours, and also at the local levels with amateur and professional events. With the tournaments, guys.
Amen. All right, Gary, stay safe. We'll talk to you next week.
Look forward to it. Be well, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, Gary.
That is Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer. And we're going to take a break and hopefully come back with Nick Kukuru. You're listening to MSO News Sports here, and this is North Shore Sports Night.
I'm Bob Gillis, president of Cape Ann Savings Bank, serving the Cape Ann community with stability and commitment for over 170 years. Since 1846, our customers have relied on our local bank service and big bank benefits. Stop by our offices or call to talk about your banking needs at 978-283-0246. Built on community, capeannsavings.bank.
Member FDIC, member DIC. EIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Gloucester's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester, now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
All right, we have the Gloucester Times sports editor on the line now, Nick Kukru. And Nick, welcome back. How are you?
Good, all things considered, you know. How about you guys?
Yeah, all things considered, right, Tim?
All things considered.
Yeah, there you go. Nick, obviously it's been a challenge for you sports writers, and I got to say, you've come up with some very creative and interesting stuff. But one of the regular things that you continue to do is to meet out the sports awards for high school athletics, and you've done it again this year. And maybe you would mention a couple of the Times picks so far.
Yeah, so just finished up last week, you know, Athletes of the Year. I think this is, 12 years now we've been doing a male and female athlete from each of the three KBAN schools. So, yeah, this year it was a little different. I was hoping to do those, you know, kind of at the end of this month, not, you know, late May. But, you know, we had to go with what we had. And, you know, we actually had, you know, a lot of good candidates. We had for Manchester Essex, Kellen First for the second year in a row, and Mia Cromwell. For Rockport, we had Kylie Schrock, who was the first sophomore to ever win it, and Andrew Gwelly. And then for Gloucester, we had Kate Delaney and Marcus Montanino. So there was, you know, obviously really good candidates across the board there. And there were plenty of other good ones, too, that were pretty close. Gloucester boys particularly, that one was a really tough one this year.
Do you get some feedback, either positive, no. Let me ask the question the way I want to ask it. You get grief sometimes from people with these picks?
Oh yeah, every year.
Really?
Yeah. I mean it's kind of, you know, kind of comes with the territory. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of times we're really splitting hairs, and you know, in the case of, you know, like, you know, this year Gloucester boys, there were probably about five of them that were pretty close that could, you know, you have a legitimate claim for that, you know, you're not going to downplay, you know, anything that you know, those kids did. So when someone, you know, comes at you with, you know, this person did this and this, I mean, they're not wrong, you know, it's just you know, it's real close. Sometimes you gotta split hairs.
I saw something online, and Tim, maybe you can jump in too. I think it was Haggerty at NBC Sports Boston, and they were just reminiscing about greatest sporting event that they ever covered. And I know that you've done things like that. And for me, it was exactly what Haggerty came up with. I think I didn't cover it, but I think one of the greatest sporting events I have ever seen was that 2011 Tampa Bay hockey game that the Bruins won 1-0. Seventh game of the series. I don't know if you remember it. You might have been a little too young. But it was the seventh game of the series. No penalties called, and the Bruins scored, I think, with 6-7 minutes left, something like that. And I call that, to me, that was the perfect game in hockey.
Yeah, and it was the opposite of, like, you know, you think 1-0 is a grind. It was the opposite of, boy, I mean, that was as exciting as it gets. Well, we weren't goal scoring, and you were kind of on the edge of your seat, you know, the entire game.
Is there a Tim, do you have a favorite like that, you know, a greatest game type thing? Well, and don't tell me it's some soccer thing up in Ashkash, New Bungie across the pond.
No. I'm going to go back to Game 7 of, I think it's the 91 World Series between Atlanta and Minnesota, that ended up going 10 innings, and Jack, help me out, Nick.
Jack Morris
went all 10 innings.
Yeah, and John Smoltz, they threw shutouts against each other.
Yeah, it was, I think that was 1-0. I mean, it was just inning after inning after inning, and it's like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, who's gonna blink here? And to me, that World Series was the best World Series because every game was a one-run affair.
No, the best World Series was when the Red Sox beat the Yankees in the playoffs. To me, that was the best, especially when they got clobbered in that third game, 16-3 or something like that? And they're down 3-love. Nick, what about you? What comes to mind? It doesn't have to be something you covered, but what's a favorite that comes to mind for you, maybe in the pros or otherwise?
That's a tough one. I'd say it's either Super Bowl, either 49 or 51. Those are probably the two best football games I've ever watched. It's tough to kind of, you know, distinguish between those two. I compare them to baseball. I'd say Super Bowl 49 is like, you know, Yankees, Red Sox in 03, where the two best teams went toe-to-toe and it was back and forth. And then, you know, Super Bowl 51 was like Red Sox, Yankees in 04, where, you know, they made that the big comeback. Yeah. So I don't know which one I choose, but it's one of those two.
Well, to who, 49 and 51? They don't
win in the Atlanta win.
Oh, well, of course. Okay. And that, to me, and I obviously this is my opinion, which isn't worth it, that to me the greatest play in the history of a championship game, the greatest play, and there are a lot of them, of course, but the Malcolm Butler interception, I'm sorry, that was,
yeah.
I mean, that was just it. That you got one? I mean,
not better than that.
Tim?
No.
Wow. Wow, because I know, Bird, when he stole the ball in, against, who was it, Detroit? That was a hell of a play. But just there's so many of them, and it's interesting, both came on defense, you know, and I don't know, there's so much. Oh, well, so what do you got lined up next, Nick, because sports may be getting back underway soon here, but what are you guys going to be working on?
Yeah, hoping so. Hoping like kind of maybe early July, Little League might be getting back up and going. They seem to be the ones that are leading the way on this, which is good to see that they want to get out there and, you know, they want to get something going, you know, if they can, of course. But yeah, this week kind of, you know, this the state tournament was going to start this week, so I'm going to do a little look back. You know, from each school, you know, the last decade of state tournament, you know, performances.
Excellent.
And stuff like that. And
Excellent.
Then actually later this month I'm going to do a little Fiesta series. I haven't decided exactly how I'm going to do it yet, but something, you know, recognizing the top, Greasy Pole Walkers, Samo Cruz, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's in the works. That's not a finished product yet.
Okay. All right. Well,
weeks down the road.
Stay tuned to the times. And I should point out also, on Tuesdays and Saturdays when the Times doesn't publish hard copy online with all the videos and the extra stuff. So maybe you should mention some of that too, because it's great stuff.
Yeah, a lot of videos. Of course, we do a podcast with Bill Newell on Fridays. They usually we do them on Fridays. They could show up on Saturday morning on all three of our websites. So that's been a lot of fun too. Yeah, I mean, it has. It's been, you know, it's been rough not covering sports, but it has kind of opened up you know, some fun things that we've been able to do that normally, you know, we might not have all the time to do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know that Mrs. Kukuru must be having fun with the kids at home, you know, and stuck in the house.
No, she's actually in Myrtle Beach visiting her parents. I'm an empty house for the week.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Oh. Well, all right. Well, enjoy it, man.
Thanks.
Don't mess it up, because you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Nick, be safe, be well, and thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
Thanks. You
See
too.
You, Nick.
Thanks, Nick. Take care. That is Nick Kukuru, who is the Gloucester Times sports editor. I did it again, and I lost Tim. Okay, so I'm going to bring him back right now. Hold on. I cut him off. If he were here, that wouldn't have happened. Okay.
Hi, you've reached 978.
Oh, boy. He doesn't know I killed him. Oh, boy. Let's try it again.
Hello?
Yeah, it's the intern. She messed up the phone call.
You gotta fire her.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. It's just still such a very bizarre time.
Yeah, it really is. And with, you know, there's no leadership down other than it's only going to exaggerate and exasperate and increase any kind of tension. And it's turning into a very, very sad time on top of the, you know, the medical crisis that we're facing, to face this kind of now, you know, internal disruption politically, it's one illness on top of another, and they both have to be dealt with. But we don't have any kind of effective leadership to really deal with either of them.
Well, once again,
I mean, it could be another long, hot summer.
Once again, the word out of Washington with the current climate crisis what's going on every night has been laid to the governors to take care of, much as it was when the original health crisis. So the health crisis, the climate, the charged racial climate right now has been left to the governors. And so they're going to have to step up as they have done before. They're going to have to do it again.
Yeah. But you know, he's just, you know, the nitwit in chief is just looking for an opportunity to say, well, you're not doing the job, so therefore I'm going to mobilize the troops. It's just scary. It's going to be a very scary summer. I can tell you that much.
Well, let's hope someone rises to the level of greatness that no one can dispute, and that we all begin to pull together again as we once did, as we have done many times.
Exactly.
All right. Coach, let's hope sports gets back underway, and we're back at it next Monday night.
All right, brother. I will see you. Take care. Tell everybody in the family I said hello.
All right, Tim, I will. Back at you. Same thing. And we will talk later. All right. Thanks, Tim.
See you, Rick.
Okay. That is Coach Kearns. Bill Newell, of course, with former Marblehead pitcher Bo Dana, now a pitcher for the North Shore Navigators, as well as a collegiate ball player. And thanks to Nick Kukru and to Gary Larrabee. And thanks to you for listening in. Coach Goodhue. Hope to see you in a few weeks out on the football field. Well, more than a few weeks, but, a couple of months anyway. Looking forward to that. All right, that'll take care of it for this edition of North Shore Sports Night. So on behalf of Bill Newell, Tim Kearns, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Be safe. Do the right thing.